Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 91, and we're talking about season 8's Empedocles. Hopefully I've said that right. And Vienen. Vienen. They're coming. And that was a bit Scottish, wasn't it? That was a bit Sean Connery. They're coming. They're coming. The aliens are coming.
Very different episode. Yes, very different episode.
Different episode. And I'm Tony. Anyway, I'm Tony Black, your host. And with me, again, is Darren Mooney. How are you?
Hello. How are things?
All right. I need to stop doing impressions about things that are not remotely related to the X-Files, because people are going to switch off, aren't they? Or are they at the point now, do you think they're committed to the Podwatch, episode 91?
I think if you've gotten this far and you're staring down season 9, I feel like maybe the occasional Sean Connery impression won't be the deal breaker.
Well, I'd hope. You know, we've jinxed that now. People are going to listen to this and go, that's it, I'm done. I'm done, Tony. You've gone too far.
Oh, don't worry. Tony's going to introduce every episode of the 9th season with a Michael Caine impression.
Now then. Nothing important happened today. I will never do that again, guys. Sorry. Anyway, Empedocles is the 18th episode of Season 8 of The X-Files, aired on April 22nd, 2001. It is written by Greg Walker, who had previously written Sherkill and Brand X. Bit better, but with Stephen Mader. And is directed by Barry K. Thomas, who... only ever directed this episode, so we're kind of in the realm of noobs in a way, or people who aren't really classic writers or directors. And this episode has a fair bit going on. You know, Mulder's back after the abduction slash death slash resurrection slash God knows what, and Scully's having a few pregnancy problems, while Agent Monica Reyes pops back up when a man dies. And another man commits murder that might be connected some way to evil and to Doggett's son. But
I like that you stressed the right word there. It was like, I feel like you communicated it with the same subtlety of the episode itself.
Evil!
You can hear the exclamation marks and the all caps.
It's a shame the episode wasn't called Empedocles with an exclamation mark. That might have set it off. You're not particularly a big fan of this one then, Darren?
No, I love this episode. I love it a great deal, in part because of the exclamation mark. Because you mentioned that, like, this is in the category of X-Files newbies. Greg Walker had worked previously on Harsh Realm, which was cancelled early in the 7th season, and he was sort of ported over along with Stephen Madia, who'd also worked on Harsh Realm. And I think that I suspect, and I don't want to cast aspersions on Greg Walker as a writer, but I suspect, looking at Empedocles, that the episode was maybe worked over in-house by some of the more senior members of the production team, or at least was given very strong direction by them, because this is an episode that feels very much like a Carter or sort of Spotnitz thing, in that it's an episode about evil, and evil is written in all caps with an exclamation mark behind it.
Evil!
In that... Evil, yes, it's about evil. In that it's got this sort of thing that you see, and you see throughout the X-Files, so episodes like Grotesque, and even like The Black Oil, which we're going to talk about in a moment in the next segment of the episode, where you have this idea of evil as a contagion that spreads and infects and warps and like basically distorts anything that it touches. The idea of evil as a tangible force in the world, which is something that I think Carter obviously brought to his work on Millennium, for example, and stuff like that. And like Empedocles is perhaps the strongest statement of that, in that Empedocles basically suggests in none too subtle terms that evil is like a virus, which is another sort of big X-Files metaphor that you have, given like, say, the use of smallpox or the spread of black oil or whatever, or even like the monster in Grotesque, where it hops from person to person. But you have the same thing here, where Mulder suggests that basically people have an immunity to evil that is worn down. It's actually a really good metaphor. It's perhaps the best metaphor, I think, for how Carter or, you know, Walker have expressed this conception of evil in the X-Files, which is that you have a sort of moral strength inside of you, and the world wears that down, and when it gets to a certain level, there's something that oozes in and just sort of breaks you and turns you into something evil and monstrous. Like, there's a point at which somebody breaks and snaps. And, like, this is a difference between, say, how, like, Morgan and Wong approach evil as compared to, say, Carter and Spotnitz, where Morgan and Wong tend to say, like, evil comes from within. Like, people are inherently evil and it's waiting to get out if you let your guard down. Whereas Carter seems to suggest that evil is, like, an external, primordial, like, existential force that sneaks into you and warps you and distorts you. You sort of see that here, where, like, Jeb Duke's peels his own face off at one point, and like there's burning hellfire behind it. And like I love this. Like it's not subtle, it's not nuanced, it's not particularly sort of like in depth, but it's this blunt statement of the idea that evil is at work in the world, and that if people, like, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing or be passive about it. And it's got this wonderful sort of like this very strong moral sensibility running through it that I kind of admire, and it's what I admire about Carter's writing in general and about like his direction of the X-Files, is this sort of willingness to go with these big philosophical ideas, even when they are maybe just a little bit outlandish and a little bit absurd. Because I think it would be entirely fair to say this is a ridiculous piece of television, but it's written with such earnestness and such seriousness and with like such conviction that it works for me, and it really, really does. And I like the dynamic that's at play here and in the next episode we're going to talk about, between, like, where Mulder is basically treated as, like, the... Duchovny described him as the Obi-Wan character for Doggett. And there's some truth in that basically, like, Mulder's the guy who's been around the block and who's done cases like this before. And we talked, I think, when we talked about Patience, we said how that was, like, Squeeze. Like, this late-season combination of Empedocles and Viennin is very much like the third-season combination of Grotesque and, like, Piper Maru and Apocrypha, where you have this idea of, like, contagious evil, and then directly afterwards you have a Black Oil episode, in case you don't get how this works and what the Black Oil might be a metaphor for. And it works really well here. And, like, there's, like... I like this idea, you know, this, and it's this lyrical sort of poetic thing where, like, Doggett's son died as a result of evil in the world, and maybe there's a thread of evil that connects these people, even though that's not how evil actually works. But it's an interesting way of thinking about the world to me.
Yeah, it is. I like this one. I like this one as well. I think it's quite a B-movie in a way, isn't it? You know, it has a lot of things that are quite silly, you know, like you said, the face pulling off and the fire behind the eyes and, you know, all this... quite sort of heightened, sort of almost operatic soap opera kind of thing, you know, even to the point that Mark Snow's music is really kind of, you know, a lot of violin strings and, you know, that kind of dong dong kind of thing going on in the
store. In case you don't get that there's evil at evil. Work here.
Yeah, yeah, evil. but it does in its own, like you said, it does in its own way work. You know, it could have really fallen flat on its face, but I think it's got such a sort of, you know, joie de vivre about it in a way that I really get carried away by it. And I think the other thing that works, as well as the broad, you know, themes that they do whack you over the head with a sledgehammer on, but I think what works are the character interactions as well. There's little things in this episode. There's things like, you know, the whole gag about the pizza guy, you know, between Mulder and Scully. They haven't had those two in a room just being able to goof around and have a little bit of that banter for a long time. So they're enjoying that little bit, I think.
It's the same dynamic, it's clearly the same characters, but it's a different sort of setup or relationship. And I like that about the show when Mulder comes back, that it's basically like, well, Mulder's come back, but it's not going to be like it was in seasons 1-7. And like the pizza boy stuff is a little corny, but it works because it's like Mulder and Scully. I think in the AV Club, they say it's like Mulder and Scully stepped into Mad About You.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like
that. Well, that's what she says. Scully actually says that in that line. She said, it's like I'm in an episode of Mad About You. So it's sort of, it feels like it's self-aware about it playing on these sort of almost romantic comedy kind of things between the two of them now. So that engenders you to it in the first place. You know, you've got the gag at the hospital about the nurse who says, "Who's the father?" And Mulder's like, "Not me." And then Doggett's like, "No, it's not me either." So it's little things, but I think things like that make it work. I would say, though, I don't think Monica at this point would have been likable by anybody, because she comes in with a bit of a swagger, with a bit of arrogance, and says to Mulder, "You're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about, you're not a believer." And at this point I'd be like, what? I think I remember at the time I was like, "Monica, back off. We've not had him for a season nearly, right? Don't come in here and try and be Mulder." But that is the point. That is the whole point of the episode, isn't it? It's the kind of, it's to show how things sort of are changing around Mulder, and how he almost doesn't feel like he has a place, but and as that, like you said, Obi-Wan kind of figure, that sort of wise guy who's sort of in the background now. But it's good. But there's a lot going on. There is a lot going on in it, and I think it just about makes it work, I'd say.
Well, when you say, like, the Mulder stuff going on, what I really like about the 8th season, or this segment of the 8th season, is that, like, all these episodes are in theory standalone, but they clearly work as part of, like, a character arc. Like, there's a sense that I think, like, at this point, Scully knows that Mulder is the father, and Mulder, I think, knows that he's the father, even if he hasn't admitted as much. And there's this dynamic at play where Scully doesn't want to force Mulder to admit that he's the father because she doesn't want him to be there out of a sense of obligation. So, like, for example, when the lone gunmen show up, it's quite clear that she hasn't told anybody who the father is. When Skinner addresses him in, like, the season finale, it's quite clear Scully hasn't told Skinner either. But there's this sense that, like, what Scully wants... Scully is prepared to raise the child by herself. Like, that's what the first half of the season was about. It's Scully, like, she can do this if she needs it. She can have the baby, and she can be a single mother, and she can take care of it without Mulder, if it absolutely 100% comes down to that. But then you have this idea in the second half of the season that, like, she wants Mulder to be there because she loves Mulder, and she cares about Mulder, and she wants to be in a family with Mulder. So you have this idea, this dynamic, and I think it's in here. In here it's strongest, in Empedocles, but also it plays out in Vienna. It's where she's sort of nudging Mulder towards, like, going from being somebody who thinks of himself as, like, a son to the cigarette-smoking man or Bill Mulder, to somebody who thinks of himself as a father to, like, Doggett, and hopefully to the child that she's carrying. Like, Scully doesn't want him to be there because he feels obligated. Scully wants him to be there because he's ready to be a father. And I think that there's a lot of that in here, like, where she says, you know, give him a chance, or he's worth it if you get to know him. You know, he's worth the effort that you put into him. And there's a sense that she's not just talking about, like, she's not just talking about Doggett. She's trying to get Mulder to think of himself as more than just that guy who was on the X-Files for 7 years, instead of, like, as a father, or as an Obi-Wan, as Duchovny would refer to himself, you know?
Yeah, yeah, definitely, definitely. It's trying to place him in a new context with these new characters, really. So it's, yeah, on that basis as well, it works. It's fun. I enjoy Empedocles whenever I watch it. I always get something out of it. So, yeah, not a bad one. Not a bad one. The next one, however, VNN. Oh, I love this. I love VNN. I will say that right now. It is one of my favourite season 8 episodes. It was written by Stephen Maeda, who had co-written Brand X with Greg Walker. He did Red Rum, where he did the teleplay. He did the teleplay for Red Rum, and I love Red Rum. So well done, Stephen. You've done some good episodes here.
I'm about to say, somewhere the neck on the back of Stephen's neck have stood up, and he doesn't know why.
Yeah, wherever you are, Stephen, obviously you're listening. And yeah, he did a couple of episodes in season 9, which people will get to soon. But yeah, and directed again by Rod Hardy, so from Roadrunners, which we previously talked about. And this episode sees Mulder, who is being told to stay away from the X-Files, ending up stranded on a... just a little bit.
Sorry, that's as far as the premise. I like that the premise is all you need to say. Mulder's been told to stay away from the X-Files, but he finds himself on an oil rig with Doggett.
On a quarantined oil rig with Doggett when the black oil returns. Now, we haven't seen the black oil for ages. I think the last time we may have actually seen the black oil properly was in the movie. So we're talking like nearly 3 seasons ago since we saw one of the most iconic elements of the alien mythology. And this almost feels like a way to not just reintroduce the black oil, but also in a way sort of give it a send-off almost. That's the way I've always seen VNN.
Yeah, it's a very odd episode in that, like, the thing about the black oil is the black oil seems to change in every single episode in which it appears. It never seems entirely consistent between two episodes. Oh, does it possess you and give you the power to do radiation flashes? Does it make you comatose? Does it impregnate you with an actual alien? You know, it does all of these things. Yeah, and more. But the thing about Vienen is, Vienen, again, it's a back-to-basics episode because it gives you the black oil as it appears to have behaved back in, like, Piper Maru and Apocrypha. Like, you even have, like, the radiation flashes, I think, in the episode as well. You have the radiation exposure. So you have this sort of stuff, this side of the black oil that you haven't seen since season 3. And it's kind of interesting that, you're right, it pops up in the middle of this super soldier mythology. And it does feel like a weird... It's a Monster of the Week episode, essentially, about what was a core part of the mythology 3 years ago. And it's just a really odd choice, but it's a choice that pays off because, like, it's black oil on an oil rig. And you're like, you wonder, like, how did it take 5 years yeah. I've been coming up with the idea of black oil to get to this, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah. It's almost high concept, isn't it? It's like high concept yeah. Hollywood pitch, right? What should we do? How should we bring the black oil back? Put it on an oil rig! Yes! And let's basically make it an action movie, you know, episode. I mean, it's encapsulated by that final shot of Mulder and Doggett jumping off the oil rig in slow motion in Die Hard, like Bruce Willis jumping off the Nakatomi Plaza. And
multiple angles as well, which I like. It's like, cut, cut, cut! It's like, it's production value...
Yeah, it's so fun. It's so fun, it's like you said. I think you summed it up well. In you're saying it's almost like a Monster of the Week episode, because at this point it is. You know, it doesn't fit with the rest of what has become the mythology now, and it sort of pops up out of nowhere. And it is the last time to date that we've seen the black oil in the show. So it is a bit like, let's just have this back and let's have some fun with it. You know, And that's what they do, you know, even despite suggesting that, you know, there is a massive, like, vat of it under the Gulf of Mexico that could infect the Earth.
but like, that's a classic, like, season one, season two ending, which is, like, the monster's dead, or is it? But because it's clearly not meant to be, like, you know that when you're watching it, you're not going to get, like, a season 9 two-parter where they're like, oh, by the way, we excavated the Gulf of Mexico. You know that this is, like, this is still out there, like, you know, Tombs or The Family from Home or whatever. It's like, this is something you still have to worry about. You don't really have to worry about, but you could have to worry about it. And it works really well. And it works really well as, like, Mulder. This is almost like a last hurrah for Mulder, because you get to see him, like, there's a bit at the end of the episode where the signal is transmitting with the radio out into space, and, like, it's contacting alien life form, which is the kind of thing that, like, Mulder has wanted from, like, since he was a child. Like, and obviously it's in a horrific context here because it's going to signal an alien invasion or whatever, but, like, little green men or whatever, like, Mulder talked about wanting to reach out into the cosmos and to, like, for humanity to find their place in space and to make contact with an alien life form. And you have Mulder smashing the radio here in a way that, like, seems, and again, it plays into that 8th season arc where it's like Mulder discovering that he doesn't need the X-Files. He doesn't need to search for what's out there. He's quite happy to accept what he has in his life at the moment. Like, he's quite happy to accept his role as kind of baby daddy for Scully, as a loving, like, you know, not husband, but a loving life partner and father, you know?
Yeah. And it's passing the torch, isn't it? I mean, that's the whole idea of it, really. It's passing the baton officially over to Doggett, because Scully's, you know, off on pregnancy leave. Reyes hasn't joined the crew yet. And it's just... And there's that great moment at the end where Doggett... The phone rings and Doggett's in the office going, how the hell did this happen to me? You know, you really get that feeling like... How did I get to this point? I'm in the middle of this office investigating, like, alien ships on an oil rig. I was a cop, like, 12 months ago. What's going on? You know, but it's really good because you do get that whole thing of Mulder going, this is your office now, you know, Agent Doggett. And they've reached that element of understanding because, you know, in three words, they were openly quite, you know, difficult.
They were shoving and, like, pushing and, sort of punching.
There was a little bit of that in Empedocles as well, where, you know, Doggett's angry that Mulder seems to be...
Stay out of my business!
Stay out of my business, Agent Mulder! You know, when it's Reyes causing the problem. But this is the one where they finally, they put a lot of that to bed, and they actually get to a point where, you know, they're okay with each other. They've reached that. They needed this episode in a way, I think, for that. They needed to get that understanding between Mulder and Doggett, and I think... This episode does that really well.
And Duchovny plays really, really well with Patrick as well, which is a shame that we didn't get more of this. And it's almost a shame that Doggett didn't come back, because you could imagine, like, a larger cast X-Files where you would have, like, this rotating team where, like, every once in a while you'd have a Doggett and Scully episode, or you'd have a Doggett and Mulder episode. Like, Doggett and Mulder play off each other really well. I'm not sure I'd want it every week, but in terms of this episode where you have, like, Doggett is just trying to do his job and Mulder is being Mulder, and it's just this wonderful, it's like if Mulder teamed up with Kirsch almost, because you have that sort of like by the book mentality of Doggett versus like Mulder's I'm going to an oil rig, you can't stop me, you know, and it works so well, and you have like the sense of playfulness between them, because you could always tell when Duchovny was on or off when you're watching the show, and he's very much on in this episode, and it's just fun, like even the stuff with the you know, I heard you could find a conspiracy at a church picnic, and Mulder sort of pauses, looks at him and goes, which church?
What church? he's having fun. And this is it. It's, you got the sense with Empedocles in a way that he didn't, he wasn't. He kind of didn't really, I think, I get the sense he didn't quite like, in a way, when what they did with Mulder in that episode. I think he enjoyed Three Words because it's a bit of an old fashioned sort of Mulder, like, a bit like Memento Mori. You know, he's out there. He's, you know, he's breaking into place. He's got the lone gunman.
He's doing some funky poaching.
Yeah, he's doing funky poaching. Yeah, yeah. And and this one, it's a bit like the old days where he would, you know, run off to go to the Arctic to, you know, find a submarine, or he'd get on a train and he'd try and find a lab or something. It's that same sort of blockbuster, sort of old fashioned X-Files episode in a way, and I think that's why it's so much fun now at this point.
Yeah, it's a Scully picks up the phone and wonders what Mulder's done now episode, which is something you haven't had in a while.
No. Absolutely, yeah, and it's a lot of fun, and if it is the final time we see the Black Oil, you know, never know, it might crop up in season 11 again. But if it is the last time we see the Black Oil, I'm happy. I think it's a damn good send off for that creature, for that, you know, whatever it is, because they never make their mind up, like you said, they never know what the hell it is. You know, it's all things to all men. It's whatever you want it to be. But yeah, good episode, really good episode. So that's us done, I think, Darren, for season 8. We'll be back together to talk some season 9 episodes coming up, which will be fun, maybe.
That is a word that people use to describe things.
Do they use that for season 9? We shall see.
Well, season 9 is a thing, ergo... I'm trying, Tony. I'm trying. Yeah, I'm really trying.
You're trying. We'll do our best, guys.
Much like season 9 is trying. Season 9 is very trying.
Very trying, yes. But until we try and come back, whereabouts can people find you, Darren?
You can find me online at the Movie Blog with a 0 instead of an O in the word movie. You can find me on the 250, which is available in iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever good or not so good podcasts are available. Tony's guested on a couple of episodes, including your anniversary special recently, and we should hopefully have him back on soon. And I also published a book on the X-Files as well. Well, I didn't publish it. Somebody else very kindly published it. McFarlane's. It's Opening the X-Files, a critical history of the original show. It has a great introduction from Kumail Nanjiani. With Christmas coming up, it is a fantastic gift for anybody in your life who has watched and appreciated the X-Files, hasn't watched the X-Files yet, has never heard about the X-Files, really just needs a paperweight. It works for so many levels for so many people.
And it is also awesome as well. I will say that, not just as a friend of yours, but as a, you know, a reader. It is just great. So snap that up, guys, for Christmas. Christmas is nearly here. It's a perfect gift. Perfect gift for any X-File. You can find us on, anyway, as well, at the X-Cast, on Twitter, at @the_X_cast. Find our Facebook group, as well as our page, The X-Cast Basement. Come in and join us, talk about Season 11 and everything else X-Files, really. We're not just exclusively about Season 11, but all things X-Files. Come and join us. And we'll be back tomorrow. Well, we won't be, but the Pod Watch will be back tomorrow.
You will be, I believe.
Will I? No, I don't think I am. I don't think I am tomorrow.
Okay.
You are.
Oh, sorry.
You are. Actually.
And that was the twist.
Yeah, there's the twist ending. Yeah, you're back with Chris Knowles to talk Alone
and I am.
Essence. Yeah, good. I'm sure the people will be relieved to know we know what we're doing. clearly.
We have a very clear idea.
And that we definitely record these in order.
The mystery is preserved.
So, join us for the last few episodes of Season 8 before we launch into Season 9. But thanks for listening. And remember, as always, trust no one.